Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron time and time again.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Mark, Chip Nellinger. Your Chip, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you doing, Casey?
Doing good, man. I have the pleasure to be at the Blue Reef Agri-Marketing World Headquarters.
We're doing it live.
So it's a very rare occasion that I actually get to have someone on my podcast that actually sits across from me. So, Chip, it's a pleasure to be here.
It's kind of neat. Kind of a different for me, too.
Yep. So it's cool. So the markets are, man, we've lost about 30, 40 cents over the last couple of weeks on corn, beans, everything's kind of just been in that. We're kind of in that, feels like we're in some kind of like minutia, kind of can't really get one way or the other.
Yeah, we're kind of in a dead zone, no man's land.
Yeah, it's a weird place to be, and there's a lot of information out there that wants to lead everyone to an upward side of the market, but there's also enough reservations out there with trade and all the other stuff we've got going on that it keeps kind of bringing things back down. So I guess what's your take on what we see happening in the market right now, and how do you see that working?
Yeah, that's probably a good description of the market currently. It's yields being lower than a year ago. Acreage, you would think, at least I think, acreage has a lot to be reduced going forward. So that's friendly. But then on the other side, demand just stinks right now. We had some tweets out this morning from President Trump about the Chinese not living up to what, you know, they said they were going to do as far as buying our U.S. ag products, and maybe they don't want a deal after all, and if they wait till after the election and he gets reelected, he's going to make it even harder on them to make a deal. And so that was taken as pretty negative as well. There was a story out from Rabobank, some research, that 40% of the hog herd in their estimation in China has been liquidated, and that there's no immediate fix of that swine flu problem there. And so that, you know, kind of leads people to believe that maybe demand on the bean side and corn to that to some extent is going to be even lower than what's projected. So it's really a war between the negative people on demand and the positive people on latest planted crop in history. A lot of prevent plant yields are going to be way lower than a year ago. And where that battle, where that war is won, maybe several months off. But then here we're less than 2 weeks away from the August crop report. So there's a lot that's thrown into that stew of uncertainty right now.
So let's talk about that August crop report. We've bounced that around here since the June crop report came out, and we waited to report some things about it's not being that accurate and what have you. They're going to go back and resurvey everyone and kind of get a better feel for what you see happen. Now, the August report is a typically important report anyhow. As you start looking down the path to August, I guess what are the traders going to be looking for to make them change their mind, or are they kind of half-baked some stuff into this now?
Yeah, so the market usually does a pretty good job of looking ahead and anticipating where the reports could be. I had a farmer call me up this morning, and he had a question, and it really sums up what the market is thinking. He said, you know, I was listening to some farm press, media here this morning, and that 91.7 million acres that they had in June, how much prevent plant is in that? And that's the question. Nobody knows, because it's such, we're so out of whack because of the late planting. That June acreage report, which is usually supposed to be the final acreage, that survey is taken the first 10 or 12 days of June. Well, at least in this area of the Corn Belt, there were millions and millions of unplanted acres that didn't. It was so wet for 3 weeks, we didn't start planting again until about the 10th through the 13th of June. and kept going all the way through basically the first week of July. And so that's the problem with the market. Nobody knows. And to answer your question, there's such a wide variance of opinions that it's setting up for the potential for a big shock one way or the other. If they don't change acres, they likely won't change them again, or they won't change them again until the January crop report. And so you get the market thinking, yeah, okay, the prevent plant acres are included in there, and 91.7 is it. If they reduce it 3, 4, 5, 6 million acres, that might get the market thinking that there's even further cuts to come by the January crop report. So it's always an important report, like you said, but with the acreage resurvey, it's just such a wild card that it really is setting us up for a lot of uncertainty and a surprise one way or the other. And that's why I wouldn't be shocked. We're kind of on a several-week low in here. We're trying to flirt around with this 420 area in December corn. There's a gap in the chart so far as we're writing or talking here. That's held. But it wouldn't shock me if you don't. The recent high was around 470 there month and a half ago. So it wouldn't shock me if we're not back in the middle of that range going into the report. And then just nobody knows what to do, right? Like, if you think corn's going up, you're a little bit nervous. If you think corn's going down, you're nervous. There's no conspiracy in that. It's just the psychology of the market.
Right.
And then all bets are off once they come out with, you know, whatever revisions they're going to do. So the interesting thing about that is they have said that they're going to do, they're not questioning farmers like they did for the March and the June report. They're going to block off one square mile chunks. I don't know how many, not as many as you'd think, across 13 states, something like 1,000, 1,100 of them. And they're going to actually count how many corn acres, how many bean acres, how many prevent plant acres. And then they're going to use satellite imagery. And they're also going to use what they said anyway, the initial RMA prevent plant data. Well, I don't know if the technology is changing, but I've talked to several producers in Illinois from multiple different counties. And if you go into those county offices and ask, they give you kind of a running total. And so my point with that is, with all the technology available with satellites, they're actually going to visually look at square miles and the RMA prevent plant data. They may be able to zero this in and have a number that should be getting us, maybe not the exact number, but we should have a better feel for what this acreage thing in prevent plants shaking out to be. So it's just going to be a wildly volatile day on the 12th of August,
right?
No matter what they say.
No matter what happens, you're exactly right. So when you, I guess this is, for lack of a better term, kind of uncharted water when you start looking at what
patch. It really is.
I mean, we're dealing with a weather market, but now the weather market's kind of subsided, and we've moved into a warmer, drier kind of feel out there now, and it's kind of during pollination, so there could be some you know, inherent risks there when you start looking at stuff. The idea of early frost now is pretty already there. You know, our crop that we grow out in my part of Nebraska, we about October 15th, the first part of October, you can kind of start to think about that first freeze, give or take. But if we're already 2 or 3 or 4 weeks behind, we already kind of pushed that window anyway. So what's that look like? We start thinking about those, especially as you move north into North and South Dakota and Minnesota and Wisconsin and those areas like that, in the northern part of the Corn Belt. The idea of some late frosts really aren't that, or early frosts, I guess, aren't really that far-fetched of a thought. Even if you just think about if the dates stay the same and where the corn crop is, there could be a lot more silage cut this year than corn picked.
There's so many questions out there that the frost is just the start of it. I mean, that will eventually be a concern in the market. But, you know, right around here, there's, arguably 20-25% of the Corn Belt that just hasn't had much rain, if any rain, in going on 3 weeks. And the lucky thing is it's been cool. You know, we're nice and cool here, you know, 83, 85 for a high, and not 95. But there's a lot of real estate that needs rain.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be front and center. We're spread out on pollination. There's some corn that start, early plant corn starting to pollinate. you know, the late planted corn is still probably a couple weeks off. So we don't get much more moisture in this chunk from eastern Iowa, kind of north central Illinois, northern Indiana. You're going to start going backwards on, you know, what that late planted crop already has problems from the day it goes in the ground and being dry for 5-6 weeks at pollination isn't going to do it any favors, I don't think. So we got a lot of weather to go through still. Frost is going to be there. You know, there's talk in already areas where farmers saying, hey, I'm not going to throw any more money at this. They're not putting fungicide on. That could be, you know, a yield effect. Some areas that got planted so late, it was, in those producers' minds, it was crop insurance play. And so maybe they're not putting the you know, pouring the checkbook at it on the nitrogen side either. There's all those questions out there. Disease issues are popping up. Just when you start with that many problems, you know, that late of a crop, it just, you fight it all the way.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then what's the moisture going to be? You know, can we get it to maturity? And are we going to be picking, you know, 38% moisture corn on December 1st? You know, right. Is it ever going to dry down?
Right.
So yeah. There's all kinds of issues out there.
Yep. So another thing, okay, let's talk about wheat harvest. If you kind of look across there, I think what we're probably close to 70% done across the entire wheat run, you know, from the custom harvester perspective and where you're at. My immediate area in Nebraska, western Nebraska, eastern Colorado, yields have been amazing. I mean, they've had 100-plus bushel mm-hmm. dry land corn all the way down to 60-plus bushel, you know, a few outliers here and there, but very good crop. Now, some of the negatives of that is that it's probably not the highest protein level in the world. They're struggling to get that protein level where they want it to, but that being said, with the problems that we see happening in Australia, Ukraine, Russia, and those major wheat-growing parts of the world, there's maybe an opportunity here for wheat to actually rebound and, like we've seen earlier this year, maybe be a leader in the market.
Yeah, so again, there's a fight there. I think wheat is going to be somewhat a follower to corn. Where, you know, on the downside of harvest, typically you get some sort of a post-harvest bounce generated. Basis is pretty good, even with a big crop. And our exports have been pretty good recently, and for several weeks in a row. And so there's all these questions out there. It's hard to get good information out of Russia, especially, and Ukraine to a lesser extent. But, you know, how big is the Russian crop? They've had a lot of heat in those areas, you know, really for a while, and some dryness. So I think the way the cash basis levels are and the way that we've been selling wheat here, it's not just like blow your doors off, but they've been pretty solid for a while. Some of the better numbers we've seen in a long time as far as our export sales go. So maybe we do, there is some, you know, some fire with the smoke on maybe a smaller wheat crop out of that Black Sea area, and we're going to start getting some exports, you know, generated. Again, there's some give and take with that, you know, lower protein stuff. There's some big feedlots that have already started switching to feed wheat instead of corn. So there's some substitution going on there from the feed perspective, because it's more of a feed wheat, some of that, you know, than a higher protein content. So there's a lot going on there. That kind of plays into what's going on in corn, and a lot of uncertainties there as well. Looks like the spring wheat crop is holding up pretty well, too. Pretty decent conditions and pretty good yield on a recent the spring wheat tour that just wrapped up, I think, a week ago. Showed pretty good potential on the spring wheat crop as well. Yeah. So,
yeah. All right. So it is. Today is the 30th, and I believe the Fed is meeting today to talk about whether or not they're going to lower interest rates, which they've given every indication that they're going to.
Yep.
That could have an effect on exports when you start looking at how that plays out. So there is some upside there, I guess, to what we could possibly see down the road with some exports.
Yeah, so that's going to affect the dollar. The dollar's been pretty strong here recently. I think that has more to do with some weakness in Europe with this Brexit deal with the British pound and the euro currency. But yeah, I think the official announcement is supposed to come tomorrow. I think their meeting's today and tomorrow. I think the official announcement is supposed to come tomorrow. The assumption is it's going to be at least a quarter of a point. There's some talk it could be half a point. Some of the recent economic data has been pretty good with jobs and consumer confidence and some other economic reports. So there's one camp that argues they don't need to cut it at all.
Right.
So that again, that's, you know, sets us up for people that think it needs to be a half a point. People think it doesn't need to be any drop at all. For a shock and surprise, it could certainly have a lot of influence on the financial markets, the bond market, the dollar, and the stock market, obviously, and that always could affect our grain markets and livestock markets. So it'll be closely watched to see what the reaction is, what they do, what the reaction is to the all those financial markets. But certainly the dollar has been pretty strong here, and that's not been it's kind of been a headwind on our corn and bean market, especially because the exports have been so poor recently. So it'd be nice to see some weakness in the dollar, but it just it's up in the air what the financial market's reaction is going to be to whatever the Fed does, and
yeah,
it's definitely going to spill over. And that, honestly, that could have been part of the weakness this morning. I mean, it was kind of a little bit of a washout earlier.
Right.
The tweet from President Trump probably didn't help, but it just seemed like it was kind of commodity wide. So there may have been some positioning here by some big funds ahead of the Fed announcement as well. That just maybe they're cutting their risk a little bit. They were long some grains and livestock and decided we better run to the sidelines here for a minute and figure out what the Fed's going to do.
Has there ever been a tweet from Trump that was positive in the market?
Well, the one that he said that China's going to take everything that raised and more was positive, but I think that was the last one.
Yeah, I think we've squeezed out all the...
The market, it wants action now. Yeah. They don't want tweets. They don't want hope. They want a deal, and they want to see product on a ship on its way to China before they're going to do much reacting.
Yeah, there's a big hurdle to climb there.
With
some of that stuff. I mean, especially with... We have these swings in the market that we've had there, those 2 week long kind of upward ticks, and then we think we're kind of on our way up, and then something happens and we lose all that, and we kind of hover around that 415, 420 range, kind of bouncing back and forth, and then when it takes off, it goes to 450, then it comes back down. You know, it's
been frustrating for sure.
It has been. All right, so let's talk about the protein complex here a little bit. We look at the cattle market again. It's kind of bouncing all over the place. There has been some support in the cattle market. I think you could probably look at some of these Chinese shipments of beef to China. We're seeing those. We're seeing some hog shipments here and there kind of going back and forth. I think last week we got like 91 million metric tons get shipped over to China, which not a big...
9,100. 91 million, we'd be limited up for a couple months.
Right, okay.
9,100. I think it was.
All right, so...
But at least it was something.
It was something,
yeah.
Right? So you've got all this stuff kind of happening, but again, an exorbitant amount of volatility in there as well. So talk about what you see happening in the cattle complex.
Yeah, cattle have turned the corner a little bit seasonally. Now's the time where you can see some better things in the cash market and cut out. We've seen that slowly. Cash cattle were up a buck last week. So that was good news. Futures are, I don't know, $4 or $5 off their lows here recently. So that heavy, heavy selling pressure looks like it's behind us. The funds are kind of out of their big long position. They were near record long in cattle, and it took two and a half months to kind of get out of that, and it was a, you know, $15 break. But we're finally stabilized a little bit here. We just need to see some better things in the cash market to maybe have a little better rally in cattle. And they've been reluctant. You know, today they were down earlier. I'm not sure where they're going to close here, but, you know, they were 60, 80 lower earlier live cattle. Feeder cattle are a head scratch or two. They're up near the highs of the last 5 or 6 weeks in here, but then you get a day where corn's down 6, you'd think that'd give feeder cattle some support, and they puke a dollar. So there's a lot of back and forth volatility in here. It could be some ideas tied around you know, the world economy in general slowing down. The U.S. economy seems to be the bright spot in the world. And it's all relative, but the world economy, I think, is pretty well a general consensus that we're kind of slowing that thing down. So that could be something that's maybe tied why cattle market can't turn the corner and really put a big rally in. It seems like they're reluctant to do that, but at least off the lows. And hogs are the same way. You know, we had a $12 run up. China was, I think, 4 weeks. They weren't in for U.S. pork sales. We've been shipping them pork pretty regularly. And then finally, last Thursday, we get China took the 9,100 metric tons, and the market pukes, right? And they were, you know, close to the limit down yesterday. We're down a couple bucks earlier. So we're still really, probably anything, the hog market is the most confusing of all. And a huge run up, you know, some 40, 50%, whatever the number is going to be of the Chinese hog herd gone. Still massive demand, record prices in China domestically. And they're taking U.S. pork, but we're, you know, 20 bucks off the high. So it is a head scratcher as to what's going on. Bottom line, we're producing a lot of protein here, whether it's beef, pork, or poultry. You know, that industry continues to get more efficient and just slowly expand. The pork industry is, I think, at least four years, if not five in a row, of, you know, 3-4% expansion. And so we're putting a lot of tonnage out there, and that might be part of the reason. But it's going to be volatile. If we get, you know, we talked about the Chinese trade deal, and the market just kind of shrugs it off now, which means when it happens, it's going to be a shock. And probably the market that has the most to gain would be, in my opinion, hogs. With, you know, if China's, they're taking pork already with tariffs and this trade war. So if you take that off the equation, I would think that they're going to go, pardon the pun, hog wild and really ramp up their purchases of U.S. pork. So that could be a good thing, and that is going to be a surprise if it happens. But, you know, it's got to be a deal in ink before the market's going to pay much attention.
Yep. Well, they waived that, what do they call it, like a tariff, the tariff thing. They've waived that for the hogs over in China. They've given a tax break, or they're waiving the tariff or something like that. So that's helping things a little too, but until it sounds like South America runs out of anything that they've got to sell down there, they're going to pretty much keep buying from South America. So
And as long as this trade war is going on, Brazil is going to be China's best friend, or at least they're going to try to be. I'm not sure Brazil sees it that way, but China's going to try to make Brazil their best friend.
They're going to do what they can to keep that.
And they're going to buddy up to Argentina as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, well, Chip, plenty of stuff going on, and you've alluded to it several times in here. There's a lot of moving parts here, and a plan is very important. So if folks want to talk to you about a plan or have you review a plan that they're working on, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, best way is just call our office, 309-550-7213. Having a plan is critical because the volatility is there. It's not going to go away, and you got to have a plan to navigate this thing. You got to know what you're going to do. If and when the market rallies, you got to know what you're going to do when the market sells off. There's things to do both in both of those cases to be, you know, competitive and get a strategic advantage. But you got to have a plan and execute it. And without a plan, you're just going to stick your head in the sand and be a victim of the volatility. So there's a way around that.
Yep. All right. Well, Chip Mellinger, Blue Leaf Ag Marketing, live from Morton, Illinois. So thanks for being
here. You bet. Thanks for coming over.
Yep. Take it easy, man.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at MovingIronPodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Mellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit MovingIronLLC.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and GlobalAgNetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour, out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find a scene.